And welcome, Steve Taylor.
Hi, Paul. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you again. It's rare to have a guest come back on the show, but I have read I listened to your latest book, The Adventure, which is A Practical Guide to Spiritual Awakening. So I had to get you back on the show. So thank you so much for coming back and congratulations on an amazing book.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad you like it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really important book. You know, it's because the last time I interviewed you, I wouldn't have classed myself as awake. I understood the theory, but I didn't get what it really fully meant until I have an awakening experience. And now, again, I'm seeing it all from a different perspective. So that's another reason why I had a little look at your book. And also I thought we could have a little dive into that here. But just for for listeners of the show, what is spiritual awakening?
The way I define it is an expansion and intensification of awareness. So it's an opening of awareness in lots of different, in four main perspectives, in four main aspects.
Yeah.
The first one is that there's an opening of perceptual awareness so that the world becomes more real and more beautiful. It becomes fresh and alive. So even seemingly mundane things seem to be fascinating and real and alive. And that's why nature, a lot of awakened people feel a very strong connection to nature. Nature seems incredibly beautiful because they have a very intense perception. There's also an intensification or an opening in terms of subjective awareness, which means that you become aware of a deeper aspect of your own being, that you become aware of potentials and energies and experiences deep inside you, almost as if I sometimes describe it in terms of before we were living in a kind of attic room inside this giant house, but we assumed that the attic room was the whole house, but now we discover there are all these floors and all these other rooms to explore, these depths of our being, heights and depths of our being. There's also an intensification of what I call intersubjective awareness, which means that we connect with other people more strongly. Mm-hmm. We feel more empathic, more compassionate. We become more altruistic because we sense other people's feelings and their sufferings. And we feel a strong desire to alleviate or to contribute to other people or to the world in general. And there's also an intensification of conceptual awareness. There's a more wide-ranging vision of the world, a wider perspectives. So we no longer perceive the world from a narrow egocentric perspective. We have a much more wide-ranging kind of global perspective. So we no longer think in terms of nationality or other forms of group identity. We just accept all human beings unconditionally, and we feel a sense of concern for the world in general, not just ourselves or for the people close to us, but for the whole human race and the whole world. So it's that kind of opening across all those areas.
Okay, beautiful. And what got you into this? Because again, it's what's led you, because you've written quite a few books on it, as I mentioned in the intro. How did you get here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was kind of natural to me. So I obviously had some innate sort of spiritual impulse within me. And I didn't understand it for a long time. When I was a teenager, I had spiritual experiences, feelings of connection to my surroundings, feelings of euphoria for no apparent reason, a feeling of harmony and meaning, and a sense that everything was beautiful and alive and meaningful. But at the time, I thought, wow, am I crazy? I had no idea what was happening. And I didn't tell anybody about my spiritual experiences because I didn't want anybody else to think I was crazy. I didn't even tell my parents about them. For a long time, I thought there was something slightly wrong with me, that I was some sort of crazy artist or poet, romantic poet who was doomed to die at a young age. But when I was in my early 20s, I discovered books on spirituality and mysticism. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm not crazy after all. Other people have had these experiences. And I began to build up a framework to make sense of my own experiences. I realized that there was this thing called spiritual awakening. You know, there were these people called mystics, and there were these things called spiritual traditions, spiritual practices. So I got into meditation. I explored different forms of spiritual practice like Buddhism and Taoism and so forth. So it was really a question of understanding myself and bringing out what was already there, I think.
And is that what led to your awakening? Is it obviously that, you know, something happened, and was it a big event for you, or was it a gradual process of just a series of events? What happened for you?
For me, it was something, I think there was a kernel which was already inside me. Maybe it came from, if you believe in reincarnation, maybe it was a previous life. Okay. But I think it was already there, but I had to sort of harness it and develop it and stabilize it. For a long time, I function quite well in the normal world now. I'm a sort of I've got a post at my university and I interact with people quite well. But when I was younger, I found it really difficult to function on a day-to-day basis. I didn't really have social skills and I felt like I didn't fit in and I didn't know what I was going to end up doing. But it was because I felt so different. I sort of behaved so differently to other people. I felt different because of my spirituality. So it was a question of kind of integrating it and allowing it to kind of settle. And that didn't really happen until I was about probably in my late 20s, early 30s. I began to kind of stabilize and spread my spirituality naturally into my life rather than thinking of it as something different to my everyday life.
Okay. And so then when did you realize that you had awakened? Was it something that, because you were reading a description and thought, oh, well, that's me. Or was there something that was an innate knowing that that's what you were?
Well, I'm a naturally kind of modest guy. I guess like many British people were kind of slightly self-deprecating. But it was only really when I began to read descriptions of mystics and I began to read the experiences of mystics and I began to think about what was really happening to people who had spiritual awakenings. I got into psychology partly because I wanted to study spiritual awakening from a psychological point of view. And I began to research the state of enlightenment and research people's spiritual experiences. And I began to realize that, you know, I was basically describing my own experiences, the qualities I was kind of reading about in other mystics or spiritually awakened people were already kind of expressing themselves in me. Like we were talking before we came on air about this sense that you have of sort of being slightly apart from your ego, some sort of observing it from a distance and having this ability to sort of disidentify with your own mind, if you like. You sort of observe your own mind from a distance and it means that you don't really get caught up in your thoughts or emotions. You just allow them to pass by. And I realized that was, you know, that was my experience too. Right. And I felt this kind of space between me. I can observe my ego functioning. I can observe my own thoughts, but I don't get caught up in them. I just observe them from a distance and I feel that there's a space between me and them. And also, in a behavioral way, I've always been a very empathic person, very compassionate, very sensitive to other people's sufferings and very concerned about the world. And I've always felt a very strong desire to contribute to the world. And I realized that's part of spiritual awakening too. So that was, for me, it was a kind of gradual unfolding of qualities or of a general spiritually awakened state, which was already within me. Wow. You know, I know a lot of, maybe, you know, your experience is probably that a lot of people go through a sudden moment where they realize that they are awakened. But, you know, for me, it was more gradual.
Yeah, mine was definitely like a jolt where suddenly I knew I was awake. I knew it was like almost like a secret smile within me. And because I was sat there just thinking, I just feel connected to everyone and everything. And I am everything and everything. This is it. You know, I'm just this consciousness having this experience. And so I knew it wasn't something that I'd read about it, but I just knew from an innate knowing that this was who I really was. And you know, the other stories, the mind identification was just illusion. Everything that, you know, has been holding me back in life, all that I've been driven by, to be fair, was an illusion. And to be liberated from that was incredible. Also humbling in lots of ways. A lot of things that I believed in or was exploring, I thought, actually, no idea if they're true. And I don't even have to find out either. I can just leave them be. I won't know.
Yeah. I mean, I love the description in Taoism that, you know, when you become one with the Tao, then you lose your kind of your own identity and your life becomes the expression of the Tao. So your life begins to flow very easily and very naturally. You don't have to try hard. You just sort of allow life to flow and you go with the flow. So life becomes kind of more effortless without that intense striving which characterizes the ego.
Yeah, and this is what I want to talk about with your book, because you know, describing waking up and the benefits, you know, what it can do for you and how it feels. So sometimes hard to put across in a way. And also people were, well, how can I awaken? What is that about? What do I do? And your book would be, and I have recommended it, I know a few of my clients have bought it, is a practical guide. So what, you know, so we've discussed what waking up actually is. What can a person begin to do if they're listening to this? And maybe they're listening to this because there is a part of them thinking, actually, maybe it's my time to wake up. What can someone practically do to begin that process?
The premise of my book is that awakening consists of various qualities. Well, I speak about eight defining qualities, which have emerged again and again in my research and in my own experience and in my studies of the world's spiritual traditions. So my assumption is that if you focus on these eight qualities and you begin to cultivate them, and I suggest various exercises, meditations, and strategies to develop these qualities, then you will effectively be cultivating awakening itself. So one quality, for example, the first quality I discuss is disidentification from the ego, which we briefly discussed already. And I mean, all of the qualities of wakefulness are kind of, you know, they should be developed in parallel. They're all kind of equivalent to each other. And they're so closely interlinked that when you develop one quality, you naturally develop the others as well. But I think disidentification is especially important because it's the kind of initial quality that we need to develop. It's kind of like the gateway into spiritual awakening, because many people are so immersed in their own egoic mode that they don't really understand that they're not their thoughts. You know, their whole mood is dictated by their thoughts or by the emotions that stem from their thoughts. And it's only really once you become aware that there is a space between you and your thoughts, that you are the observer rather than the thinker, then you gain a kind of freedom. You become free from your thought-dominated ego. You become free of the fluctuations in mood which are caused by the ego. And your mind naturally begins to quieten and your life begins to flow much more easily. So you know, there are certain exercises I recommend which create this sense of disidentification from the ego.
And it's such great exercises and such an important part, you know, especially if we're, I know that we've talked about this before, but the world seems to be almost turning up the dial for some people in some cultures to become so attached to their ego and to vocalize what their ego is saying and to get other people to validate their ego. And we seem to be witnessing that on stronger levels than maybe ever before. There's a part of this that's happening so that people then at some point have a crash and begin to think that they have to do something other than believe their thoughts and be validated this way, because it you know, the consequences are quite dark, aren't they?
They are, yeah. But perhaps it is part of our evolution. I think a lot of people initially have this belief that you can gain happiness through possessions or through status, through achievements. They believe that happiness is something to be created by your own actions or by accumulating certain things. But, you know, once you gain the things that you thought would bring you happiness, you realize that it doesn't lie in those things. People always get disappointed when they you know, try to gain happiness in those ways. And some people just carry on. They keep trying to accumulate more and more things, more and more riches, more and more possessions, more and more success. But a lot of people, at some point, they realize, wow, this isn't working. You know, I need to look elsewhere for happiness. So, you know, I think some people definitely need to go through that phase of disillusionment, you know, with egoic striving. And then you realize, you know, there's this whole world inside me. There's another kind of continent within me to explore. So you begin to sort of turn away from the external world of accumulation, and you begin to enter a new world of inwardness, you know, where you realize that happiness is actually, well, let's say contentment or fulfillment. Contentment or fulfillment are actually inner states, you know, and no matter what's going on outside us, we always have the potential to generate well-being within ourselves or to find well-being within ourselves. So maybe it's all part of that process.
Just as a quick question about that, and I agree with you. I think, I don't know, it almost seems like there's a crescendo happening where people will suddenly just go, I can't carry on the way I'm carrying on. Something has to change, and that inner crisis can lead to an awakening or exploring what they can do differently. But you say we all can, you know, we can all generate that well-being within us. And that, you know, if we look at awakening, that we're all one and we're all connected. And often people ask me, well, what about people in Ukraine or people in war-torn Sudan who are struggling? How do we reconcile that with awakening? Or is it just, as someone asked me as a question, is this just a privilege that you have compared to other people? And it'd be interesting to see what you would say on that. Because I guess people come up, must ask you a bit about, well, what about all the darkness going on in the world? And there's a lot of it we could focus on. What are your thoughts?
My view is that the darkness in the world is caused by the unawakened state. It's caused by a state of separation and inner discord.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a very literal sense, You know, one of the great things about becoming awakened to some degree is that you lose that desire for conflict with other people. You lose the desire to, you know, steal other people's possessions, to conquer other people, to take revenge on other people. All of that falls away. But if you're in an egoic, unawakened state, then you feel a sense of separation. You feel a sense of incompleteness and vulnerability. So you're constantly living in a defensive and aggressive mode. So you do feel this desire to conquer, to take other people's possessions, to take revenge on people. You feel the desire to complain and criticize. So, you know, the root of warfare and conflict is that state. So really, ultimately, the only hope that human beings have to live in harmony is to move towards awakening. So it's not narcissistic to be concerned with your own spiritual awakening.
No,
it is the only path to global peace.
Yeah, I think it does feel like there's a bit of a revolution going on. And maybe it's because I'm just looking more at the stuff that people are doing. And there's some brilliant people out there talking about, awakened awareness in their own different ways. And what about in regards to like famine? If we're looking at other people suffering, do we think that's from, you know, yes, man could help, but if someone is really struggling and they can't get that innate well-being, what about, you know, what would we say about that sort of situation?
It's a very difficult issue. But I mean, one thing I would say, I mean, I've done a lot of research on the phenomenon which I call transformation through turmoil.
Okay.
I don't want to in any way sound blasé about people suffering, but this idea that you have to transcend physical hardship or environmental challenges in order to experience wakefulness is not necessarily true. There are lots of people who are struggling in the world who will experience spiritual awakening. You know, I've done a lot of research on people who have awakenings while they're in fighting in war, soldiers, you know, who have awakening experiences, people in prison who have awakening experiences, people who suffer bereavement. This is all really common. You know, I've written 2 books about these experiences. So yeah, we shouldn't assume that people can't experience spiritual awakening because they're living in poverty and conflict. In fact, in some ways, they're more likely to experience it because it can arise from crises and hardship. But I mean, but even if even if you do take that perspective, everyone in the world is going to reach a point at some point. You know, if you're lucky, you will reach a point where your life becomes stable and comfortable. And most of us who live in Britain or America have reached that point. Most Europeans are lucky enough to reach that point. So you're going to reach a point where you have to consider spiritual awakening. You know, when your life does become comfortable and easy, then you're going to realize that you are dissatisfied with your life as it is, that you need something more, and that happiness lies elsewhere. So it's a point that all human beings are going to have to encounter at some point.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think I agree with you. I think there's a real, you know, you can only, you know, focus on things outside of yourself for so long before you have to look inwards. And it does. It creates an element of hope, doesn't it? That this world could be, you know, for our ancestors especially, who are, you know, I was talking to someone today saying, well, they're still me. My ancestors are still me, you know, but I'm just in a different expression. So what, you know, me investing in my future self is, you know, has different meaning when we're everything and everyone and even our, you know, our future selves.
Yeah. I think we also need to consider that we're all interconnected. You know, no man is an island, as the saying goes. And when you experience awakening, you realize that, you know, as you have done, you realize that especially powerfully, that you're not a separate individual. you are connected to every other human being, not just the people close to you, but all other human beings or all other living beings. Mm-hmm. So the development that you undergo as an individual and the awakening that you undergo as an individual will affect the whole human race, even if only on a small level. It will affect everybody. It will increase the potential for awakening in the whole human race. Mm. You know, so I've always thought that the more people who awaken, the easier it will be for other people to awaken.
Absolutely.
And eventually, maybe awakening will be normal for human beings.
And that's what I liked about your book. That's what how you describe it, is it's a really normal thing. It's not for special people. It's not for someone who sat in a monastery for, you know, 50 years and living on bread and water. You know, it literally is for everyone. And that's why I think your book is so important. And, you know, you talked about disidentification as a step. What would be another important step that you could let listeners in on that would help them with awakening?
Another one is detachment. Mm. And by detachment, I don't mean becoming indifferent or distant from other people. Attachment means that you no longer depend on external things for your well-being and your identity. So normally, human beings are attached to a lot of things which give us a sense of identity. We're attached to our beliefs. You know, you may identify as I don't know if you're American, you might identify as a Republican or a Democrat. You might identify as a religious person, a Christian or a Muslim. So that gives you a sense of identity. You also are attached to possessions. You know, the things around you, your possessions, give you a sense of identity too. Your house gives you some identity. Your roles in society, maybe your job, your hobbies. So there are lots of things that give us a sense of identity. But in spiritual awakening, these external attachments begin to fade away. So you don't feel attached to possessions anymore. You know, you can value your car or you can value possessions because they're useful, but you don't need them anymore. and you sort of drop your beliefs as well. You don't really need to identify as a religious person or with a particular political party, even a football club. You know, I've met some people who were big football fans before they were awakened. And afterwards, they still enjoyed watching football, but they dropped the allegiance to one particular team. So, and it's incredibly liberating to be freed of these things, to be freed of these attachments, you know, it's also ambitions as well. A lot of us are attached to ambitions. I'm going to do this in the future. I'm going to be a successful author or film star. But you let go of these attachments. And the less dependent you are on external things, the more rooted you are in your essential spiritual self. So the less attached you are, the more your essential spiritual self can manifest itself. Yeah. So you feel a sense of wholeness and you realize that there is a deeper kind of identity within you, which doesn't depend on anything. And it kind of sustains itself no matter what is happening around you, no matter what you have or don't have. So you become, you know, more rooted within your essential self.
I think that's important to what you just said about, you know, connecting with that part of you, because it's that's the voice, isn't it? That's the intuition. That's the being that, if we listen to it more, that seems to guide us through life in a way where we feel very aligned. Whereas if we don't work out how to listen to that voice, then we're basically listening to the voice of our conditioning, and we're literally puppets on strings to whoever gave us that conditioning. We're just repeating the past. So that's just why I really wanted to emphasize, and thank you for, you know, talking about detachment and disidentification, because they're such important parts that would make such a big difference to people's lives and improving the quality of it. If people didn't really understand what awakening was or why they should do it, just that alone is powerful.
Yeah. I mean, another really important one is gratitude. And gratitude, you probably experienced it yourself. It just arises naturally when you're in the mode of awakening. You feel a natural sense of gratitude for all of the small things that you used to take for granted.
Yeah.
And people as well. You know, we can very easily take people for granted, particularly members of our family or people that we've known for a long time. But when you awaken to some degree, you become aware of the preciousness of these people and all of these things in your life. I have an exercise based on traveling to the moon, because so many of the astronauts who went to the moon and the late 1960s and early 1970s, they had transformational experiences.
Yes.
Based on the fact that they felt an overwhelming sense of gratitude for life on Earth. You know, they saw this tiny, beautiful planet, this blue-green oasis in the midst of the nothingness of space. And they realized that everything that they loved and cherished was on that tiny planet. And so when they returned, they felt this amazing sense of gratitude for their lives.
I love that you mentioned that. And it reminds me of, you know, there are people who don't believe we landed on the moon and that the Earth is flat.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I was writing about this earlier. I think we have this innate feeling of wanting to know the truth. What is the truth? And our desire for the truth, I think, is part of our awakening. What? Who am I? What am I? What's this really all about? But the mind distracts us with, you know, illusionary truths that we get drawn to and become very distracted by, attached to. And in a way that creates this obsession or mission, but takes us away from something that we never will fulfill unless we begin to look back at what is the truth? What actually, who am I? Not, you know, did we land on the moon or anything like that, but who am I? And I think that's often missing when it comes to getting lost in truth seeking.
Yeah. I mean, those kind of, that form of truth is based on, it's conceptual, it's based on beliefs and ideas. But in awakening, the only truth is really experience.
Yeah.
So you begin to move away from thinking about the world to just experiencing the world. And that is a much more immediate and direct an authentic form of truth.
Yeah, just let go of things that really are none of our business. That's what I found.
Yeah, I got friends who, you know, they tried to tell me about conspiracy theories, but I'm just not really particularly interested. I don't think it's particularly relevant to me, you know, because it's just mental, you know. I don't mental in a derogatory sense. It just comes from the mind. Yeah. So I'm interested in experience.
Yeah, and it's not just conspiracy theories. It's like even religion, a lot of spiritual beliefs, political beliefs, anything where you're just being, you're seeking the truth, which can be admirable. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a wrong thing to do, but if it takes you away from exploring the truth of who you are, then I think you've got caught up in a trap where the mind is doing something very clever to stay relevant and to make you feel relevant. You know,
I agree, you're
truth seeking.
I agree. I think when the mind feels threatened, that's when it invents stories. Mm. You know, it's like, look at me. You know, I'm interesting. Pay attention to me. So, yeah, it's a little bit insidious, you know, particularly when you get immersed in those stories, they tend to become more elaborate and you get more divorced from your essential, you know. I mean, our essential nature is not conceptual. It's not thought. It's kind of a spacious awareness.
Mm. Experience. It really is. And when a person is awakened or awakening, what challenges will they face, do you think? What's something that, because I know you've interviewed a lot of people in their experiences, what comes up?
Sometimes if a person doesn't understand what's happening to them, if they don't know anything about spirituality, they've never explored meditation, or they don't know anything about spiritual traditions or Buddhism or Taoism, etc., they'll be... Well, not always, but they will often be confused and think, well, you know, I feel great. I feel connected. I feel marvelously alive. But, you know, what's happened to me? Who am I? You know, I'm not the same person I was before. And their friends may say to them, you know, what's happened to you? You seem different. You're strange. Have you taken some psychedelic drugs? So they may start to doubt what's happened to them. Oh, you know, maybe there's something wrong with me. There's one guy I interviewed who had an awakening experience when he was in prison. And he had no idea what happened to him. And he actually got hold of a textbook of psychiatric disorders. And he started reading the book, trying to locate his disorder, his symptoms. Right. But luckily, he didn't find it.
Yeah.
And then he found a book about spirituality. He thought, this is me. This is what's happened to me. I'm not going crazy. I've become awakened. So that can be a little tricky, a sense of disorientation. And also relationships can sometimes be tricky because, as I've just described, people may misunderstand you, miscomprehend you, think that you've changed. So I guess one of the more negative aspects of sudden spiritual awakening is it sometimes does cause breakdown in relationships because a person suddenly becomes very different. So their partners feel like they're together with a different person. But I mean, I think it always works out because once you undergo awakening, you always gravitate towards people who will support you, who share your awakening to some degree. So there's no dissonance there, really. And another issue is that when awakening is especially dramatic, it can be a little bit explosive. You know, there's a sudden breakdown of the ego, and this new spiritual self suddenly arises in quite a dramatic way. So that can be a bit disorientating, even a bit disturbing. Mm. It takes a while to settle down. But, you know, when awakening, often awakening is you know, not as sudden as that. And there is a period of adjustment, a kind of acclimatization. I mean, basically, you've kind of landed in a new landscape of spiritual wakefulness, and it's a kind of more rarefied air. You know, everything looks brighter. And
everything.
It takes a while to get used to it.
It does take a while to get used to it. One thing that your book actually mentioned this, and I'm glad it did, was I noticed that I was very heightened in energy. I went away skiing, and the energy was just, I was just thinking, it was like I was having hot flushes, and I was thinking, am I having the male menopause? You know, I am of the age, I guess. But it was also like a sexual heat. It was very, very strong. It was very, you know, and it's dissipated. So that's, you know, it's the thing. So for a moment, I was thinking, what is this? What is this going on? And luckily, you mentioned it in your book. So I was quite grateful.
Yeah, that's interesting. Not everybody has that, but I think I once wrote a paper called Two Modes of Sudden Spiritual Awakening. One mode is kind of when the ego dissolves.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a new self seems to arise in its place. That's why it sometimes happens in the midst of trauma and turmoil, because that breaks down the ego and suddenly a new self arises. But yeah, but awakening, it can be sort of more, you know, I describe that there's sometimes almost a sexual energy that kind of releases itself. It's almost as if there's a kind of energy center. I mean, this relates to what Indian philosophy calls kundalini, again, energy, which is supposed to be at the bottom of the spine. And it, you know, you can gradually cultivate it, or it can suddenly explosively arise within you when it causes a lot of disruption. But it is very energetic. There's a sudden release of very potent energy, and it takes a while for it to settle down, but it always does settle down. It's just like an earthquake, you know, an earthquake sort of quickly settles again and the ground becomes still again.
It wasn't unwelcome. It was a very, but it was, I wasn't used to, it was just like a throb just flowing through me up. It did flow up. And then it would just, you know, I just felt, God, I felt, you know, super connected to everything. It was just a strange energy that, yeah. It did die away, because I don't think I could quite cope with that being 24/7.
Yeah.
And still continuing months later.
Did it cause any problems with sleeping?
Everything became heightened. Mm. Everything became heightened. But not in a tense, anxious way. It was just a stronger sense of awareness. And I could feel this like heat in my body. So I sat with it and just, I'd heard about the kundalini. I'd looked in chakras before, and I thought maybe it's that, but I don't want to get caught up in a belief system. I'm just going to sit and experience this and just, and I knew I was safe, and it wasn't anything too odd, but I wasn't expecting that at all.
Yeah. I think once you get out of the kind of cramped space of the ego, or once the ego dissolves, you suddenly have access to a lot more energy within you. Mm. You know, I think most human beings live in this sort of fairly small space of the ego, and that's the whole focus of their attention and their identity. And you sort of become detached from deeper levels of energy and deeper levels of being within you. But when the shell of the ego breaks, then, you know, you suddenly have access to all of these potentials and energies within you.
Yeah, I guess that's the hard bit to know. Because a lot of the stuff, the texts that talk about, you know, awakening, go down quite a spiritual, you know, esoteric route, which, again, I'm just not aware of any of it. I don't know if any of it's true. I've got no idea. I don't have a belief system attached to it. So it's. I know that my mind would like some structure, but I don't feel attached to wanting to have any of that structure. So I've kind of left it. But it is interesting how we want to create a process for this, so to understand it. And I wonder what is the truth.
I think that's why spiritual traditions came into being, you know, as a way of trying to understand that. I think the concept of Kundalini came into being as a way of trying to describe the kind of experience you had. And you don't need to attach yourself to any particular belief system. I think all the belief systems are valid in some way. They're all trying to describe the same thing from slightly different perspectives in terms of different worldviews and different beliefs about the world. They're just like different windows on the same landscape.
Yeah, that's a very nice description. We're going to wind up soon because we're coming to the end of our interview. But I want to ask you one more question. But what would be a myth about awakening that you would like to dispel here today? What's a myth that you keep hearing and think, do you know what, let me put this right?
Well, there's one that we touched on briefly already, the idea that awakening is something esoteric, unattainable, and extraordinary. I used to believe that myself. I thought, wow, you know, maybe there are only a few people in the world who are enlightened, maybe a few people in India, maybe a few monks in Tibet.
Yeah, yeah.
But in actual fact, it's quite a, I wouldn't say it's common, but it's not uncommon. You know, that I think there are thousands of people around us who've attained some degree of awakening. I mean, I think in terms of different degrees rather than kind of an either or state. So I think it is common. I think a lot of people who experience it are not aware of it as spiritual awakening. It's just their normal state. But, you know, they always feel a sense of connection to others, a sense of connection to nature. They feel incredibly empathic and with a sense of gratitude and so on. But they just don't describe it in terms of spiritual awakening. And I'll mention briefly one other. One is that there's an end point to awakening as well. A lot of people think that you become enlightened, and that's it. You can relax and just enjoy yourself because you're enlightened.
We wish.
But it's an ever unfolding process. It never ends. It's just a constant, continual deepening and expansion. It's a journey, and there's no end point.
Yeah, I 100% know that that's true. It just feels like it's constantly moving, an energy that's constantly moving. And it's interesting just to be present and experience that, you know, without any expectation, just seeing what happens. It's become my catchphrase. I'm just going to see what happens.
It's great to observe things with that space that you have between you and your mental processes, or between, you know, your whole being. It's great to observe what arises and to appreciate what arises.
Okay. And so if anyone wants to find out more about you, you know, because it's been a great interview, and I'm sure people are thinking, I need to get this book, which I'm going to heartily recommend. But where can people find out more about you, Steve?
The best place is my website, which is stephenmtaylor.com. That's Stephen with a V, M for Mark, stephenmtaylor.com. And there's information about how to get hold of the book and information about my upcoming online course as well.
Okay. What course have you got?
It's an online course based on the book. It's called The Adventure Online Course. It's an 8-week video course where we go through some of the exercises. We have 1 week based on each characteristic in the book, like gratitude, disidentification, and so on. And the sessions, I'll guide people through exercises, and we'll cultivate those qualities in order to experience an overall state of wakefulness.
Beautiful.
And that's starting on the 7th of April.
Brilliant. Beautiful. If I'll get a link to that, and I will pop it into the show notes. So all you got to do is scroll down through this episode. You'll see show notes on how to contact myself or how to contact Steve, and also the link for his course. Steve, never enough time to talk to you, but thank you so much for coming back onto the show to discuss your new book. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No worries. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. And to everyone watching this on YouTube especially, thank you so much for joining me for this special episode with Steve Taylor. And I'll look forward to connecting with you in the very next episode. Have a wonderful, peaceful, and present day.